All right. Hello, everyone. Yeah, it's kind of fun being here during this time slot. It's my second week in a row. What's fun for me is that it's Laurent's time slot, and he has filled in for me many times, so I'm kind of accidentally filling in for him, and that's nice. next week during this time slot, Dov, I am going to be on the radio with John Troy and Trip Overholt. I don't know if you remember, but I went out and visited them in North Carolina in November, and I sat in with them while they interviewed someone else. Kathy Scott Perry set it up so that now they're interviewing me. So, yeah, I will be interviewed by them next Tuesday, starting right at 12 noon Eastern time. The website is www.thewizardllc.com. So if this time slot happens to be open next week, if Laurent's not back, you could probably just stick that in here, and I'll be on 3 weeks in a row. let me let Jamie out. She's so good at, as soon as she hears my voice starting to teach, going outside, isn't she? Oh, and you're on John's show on May 22nd. Very cool. All right. Yeah, I really enjoyed meeting John and Trip. And John Troy and Trip Overholt, I think is his name. Yeah, Trip Overholt, I believe is his name. And, oh, and you met them through me. Yeah, and you know, one little interesting story. I don't have the details, so I'm going to tell the very brief version. But John Troy was one of the people that the course was sent to review before it was published. So he read the course a very long time ago. I believe he told me he was also called as a witness in the lawsuit. So he's got a little bit of involvement with the course, too, although he's definitely not a course student by any stretch of the imagination, but some involvement there. So, all right. So we are here for the continuation of the seven steps to awakening, and we're going to begin with quote number 99 today. I am going to give you the link. Oops, nope, that's the wizard's link. Hold on, let me go get the appropriate link. Here is the link to the very first journal entry for the day. But before we get started, why don't we do a moment of silence? Amen. All right. So, as I mentioned, we're going to begin with quote number 99 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Right now we're reading from step one, the section of quotes by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this is quote number 99. Mere listening, even memorizing, is not enough. If you do not struggle hard, to apply every word of it in your daily life. Don't complain that you made no progress. I'll read that one more time. This reminds me very much of what we fondly call the Spirit's admonition in NTI. It's in Matthew, NTI Matthew 6, I think, about to listen but not to practice is not to hear, or something like that. Ken is always quoting it here in the room. Mere listening, even memorizing, is not enough. If you do not struggle hard to apply every word of it in your daily life, don't complain that you made no progress. There is one comment I'd like to make before I go to the journal. As you know, I don't do counseling anymore, but I certainly did it for a number of years. And so I did come to understand how somehow there were things that I intuitively just understood, got, that maybe others didn't. And one of those things is like the word struggle hard, or try hard. I always knew that, when Spirit was asking me to really practice, or Inner Ramana was asking me to, ask 1,000 times a day, I always knew that what they were asking me to do was to remember as much as I could remember and practice every time I remembered, but completely without judgment. So if hours would pass and there was no remembering and therefore no practice, then there was to be no judgment because of those hours. But as soon as the remembrance came back in, oh yes, this is how I'm supposed to be practicing now, then immediately in that moment get back to the practice. And I understand that's what struggle hard means. Struggle hard means even if my resistance is saying don't practice, if the remembrance is present, then practice. Whenever the remembrance is present, practice. That's what struggle hard means. But it doesn't involve judgment. And one thing that I've learned over the years is that many, many people do not understand that it doesn't involve judgment. And practice becomes a real ego burden for them because they're constantly judging themselves as not practicing enough. So I would just like to take a moment to clarify that when Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj or Ramana Maharshi or NTI or anything else, Regina Don Acres, because Regina loves discipline too, when anything is encouraging discipline, encouraging, struggle hard, put your effort into it, put all of your attention there, it's really talking about when grace has provided the remembrance. It's not asking you to judge yourself when forgetfulness just happens to be there, and that's just the way it was. Instead, you forgive the forgetfulness, but as soon as you notice the forgetfulness, you're back in remembrance at that moment. And so at that moment, you return to the practice. So hopefully that helps. When you understand there's no judgment in struggle hard, practice is not a burden. It really isn't. It's just a loving dedication. It's a loving discipline. Remember in the teachings of Inner Ramana, Ramana said that discipline is lovingly loving your love. Because in that particular message about discipline, Inner Ramana was very good at leading us to the realization that we really do want this. We really do want to awaken. We really do want to know ourselves. And we really do want the practices that are helpful in that direction. And so that is our love. And so Ramana said that discipline is lovingly loving your love. So again, that's the struggle hard. When you hear struggle hard, remember that definition of discipline. So again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, mere listening, even memorizing, is not enough. If you do not struggle hard, lovingly loving your love, to apply every word of it in your daily life, every time remembrance is present, then don't complain that you've made no progress. And actually, that just makes sense. to me anyway. I'm providing the link again. If anybody happens to be listening on the radio, the link to the journal is RDA7. That's the digit 7. It's not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And we are in step 1, which you will find in the menu bar. And we're about to read number 99. So RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, step 1, number 99. All right, here is what I wrote after contemplating Nisargadatta's quote. The 7 steps to awakening suggests reading the quotes and what is written about the quotes hundreds of times. This sounds like an enormous effort, but in truth, this effort is minuscule and on its own, nothing. The purpose for the recommended repetition is to help replace habitual and seemingly automatic ego perceptions and thinking with perceptions and thinking meant to undo ego. However, in order to undo ego, decision-making and action, or non-action, must follow the introduced ideas instead of the habitual ways of perceiving and thinking. If habits are maintained even as new ideas are read and reread hundreds of times, no ego undoing occurs. Even if new ideas are shared and talked about, no undoing occurs without consistent implementation of those ideas. Old ego maintenance habits must be dropped if ego is to be undone. So again, anyone who's familiar with this current practice that I'm involved in, the 7 steps to awakening, you know that the recommendation is not only to read each quote at least 3 times, contemplate it, and then write what comes through you, but also to go back and read the quotes themselves and what you have written hundreds of times. And again, like I wrote in this particular journal entry, that sounds like an enormous effort, but in truth, it's nothing if that is not followed up by practice. What is really important is that we practice what comes through these quotes and what comes through us as we contemplate these quotes, that we struggle hard to lovingly love our love by putting these undoing ideas into practice at every opportunity. Yesterday I talked about, I don't have a new problem today, so we'll have to stick with yesterday's problem. Yesterday we talked about when Delta Airlines changed the flight schedule, which really meant we could not make our connection home after returning from Tel Aviv. You know, and I mentioned that there was a little thought that showed up in me. The little thought was something like, I'm the customer here, and your job is to provide service, and you made this 3-hour schedule change, which is, you know, really quite a schedule change. It's not just a few minutes, and so you need to fix it. You know, this idea showed up. I also told you that really I never even truly let the idea complete itself, so it never got into my emotions. I never had that emotional experience that the idea would have manifested into if I had allowed it. But you see, if I was reading these quotes hundreds of times a day, and then, you know, a little problem shows up like the Delta airline schedule change, and that idea pops in my mind, well, they just have to fix this then because they're screwing up my trip and this is you. And I called them up with that attitude and, you know, was attacking with the person on the other end and angry and upset. Well, then what good was it to read these quotes hundreds of times? You know, that's the point that Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj is making here. I remember when Eckhart Tolle was on with Oprah. I may have read this in one of his books. It may not have been with Oprah. It may have just been in one of his books. Somewhere along the way, Eckhart Tolle talked about people who perceive themselves as spiritual, maybe even very spiritual. But yet the second the stockbroker calls and says that they're the stocks have all dropped and their money has really dropped down. They're incredibly, incredibly upset. The practice is just not there. And that's really what's most important. That's what NTI Matthew chapter 6, as Ken calls it, the Spirit's admonition. That's what it's telling us. It's the practice that's important. It's the practice. And so we each need to struggle hard. The struggle hard comes from the fact that we have habits, very ingrained ego habits. I mean, if you've ever tried to change your diet or begin an exercise program, even then you have to struggle hard to make the change. You plan to get up and exercise tomorrow, and the alarm goes off and you sleep just like you always have, right? Well, the same thing here, maybe even more so. These ego habitual ways of thinking and reacting are very ingrained. And so we must struggle hard to make the choices that are also present in our mind that really will undo those habits. But that struggle hard does not imply judgment. That struggle hard just means really reaching for what we truly want, lovingly loving our love, as Inner Ramana would say. All right, that's it for number 99. So let's scroll down and to the left, just above the dark gray area. We're going to get into three digits now, number 100. I will post, this is a real short one. I will post the link to number 100 in the room. Before reading number 100 from the journal, first I'm going to read number 100 from the book. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Do understand that the mind has its limits. To go beyond, you must consent to silence. This follows up with some of the quotes we looked at yesterday, which really showed that mind cannot do this. In fact, that's in the teachings of Inner Ramana as well. In the teachings of Inner Ramana, Ramana says, mind cannot do this. Mind can never do this. So it doesn't matter how well we know A Course in Miracles, the teachings of Ramana Maharshi or Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj or anything else. Eventually, what we really need to do is to surrender into silence. I think it's very fair to say right now some of us would not know how to do that. That we would want to be silent. We feel that we want to be silent. We're able to be silent for a few seconds, and then the mind grabs onto some story, and before we know it, we're off and running again. And so then the practice is just every time we notice that happens, we bring it back to the silence. And it's just kind of constantly coming back. Constantly coming back. If we look at the journal entry number 100, you'll notice this was just very simple. I simply wrote, I consent to silence. This is what the Course and the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament would call giving my willingness. One thing that I really trust is grace. And in fact, as you guys know, because I'm in the Community Miracle Center ordination program, I am doing the course workbook again because it's a required part of the program. Before now, I'd only done it once. But I was meditating on the A Course workbook lesson a couple of days ago. I don't remember exactly what the lesson was. Some of you may when I describe it. But it's the one where Jesus talks about seeing the mind as a circle of clouds. And he says, we're standing outside, so all we can see is the clouds. And he asks us to begin moving through the clouds towards the light that's in the center that we can't see. And at some point, he says something like, if you're doing these exercises properly, you should feel picked up and carried. Do you guys remember that particular lesson? Well, I was doing that lesson, and actually this time around, not the first time that I did it back in 2004, but this time around I did feel picked up and carried. In fact, very quickly, almost as soon as I started the meditation, I was picked up and quickly moved through the clouds to the light. And when I got to the light, the body, this body, was quickly partially dissolved into the light. Partially dissolved into the light. So if you were to look at the body, you know, from the toe to the head, about the right 25%, let's say, was dissolved into the light. That part of the body did not exist. The other 75% of the body was outside of the light and still existed. And the guidance that I received when I was in that place, it did not have words, so I'm putting the words to it. But the guidance that I received was to soften here. The guidance seemed to say, again, indicate, it was wordless, but it seemed to indicate that if I was to try too hard, and by try too hard, because again, we're having an interesting discussion about the word struggle. Hold on one moment. Are you going to come back in? Oh my goodness, you're a mess. Well, come in. We have a very dirty dog in the house that we'll just have to clean up after wherever she goes. To try too hard, because of course we just heard Sri Nisargadatta ask us to struggle hard, right? But to try too hard is again with that judgment behind it. So I would be trying too hard if I'm practicing with a sense of where I'm at is not good enough. I have to practice to get myself there, you know, more in the light. Because until I'm more in the light, I'm not good enough. You see how that has a sense of judgment behind it? So the guidance, while I was, you know, 25% dissolved into the light, the guidance was not to try too hard, not to try to push myself into the light. And also not to allow fear to come, because again, part of the I was dissolved, right? Part of the little self was dissolved. Not to let fear to come and pull back out either. But instead to just soften right where I am. And Miss Jamie wants to go out again. All right, my love. All right, there you go. So we didn't have to clean up anything because she'd never laid down. So when I look at number 100 in the journal, I consent to silence, right? That has that same presence of softening right where I'm at. I'm still going to practice as I'm being guided to practice whenever remembrance is present. I'm still going to, in that way, without judgment, struggle hard to lovingly love my love, right? To be present with the true desire of awakening, of knowing thyself, and of being present of whenever I get distracted by the mind, to pull myself back into the heart or back into watching the isness or back into self-inquiry. But at the same time, there's a softening there with a consent to be further dissolved by the light. And trusting grace to do its part. Right? I do my part, and grace does its part. In fact, another symbol that came to me this morning when I was doing my seven steps contemplation was the symbol of yoga. I just started doing yoga a few weeks ago. So I'm at the beginner level, and I may never go past the beginner level. I'm quite happy with it. We'll see what happens. But when you're doing yoga, at least as a beginner, one of the common instructions that's given is to go as far as you naturally can, but then don't push yourself any further. Let the body naturally open, right? Let the body naturally go further. That's kind of like the idea of grace for me. I go as far as I can. I try as hard as I can right now. I'm silent for as long as I can. I pull myself back into silence when I'm distracted as much as possible, right? I do my best where I'm at right now. Just like in a yoga, I would bend as far as I can right now. And then I soften. And I let grace I let grace naturally take me further. You know, it reminds me of Ramana Maharshi's teaching of the heart as a magnet, right? And it will naturally pull us in. So for me, that's what's behind this very, very short, I consent to silence. I consent to silence. All right, let's move, scroll down then to just above the dark gray area and over to the left, and we're going to click on number 101. And I don't think there's anybody new in the room, but I will go ahead and post the link just for the fun of it. And if you look in the book is The Seven Steps to Awakening. We're on page 31. We're going to re-quote number 101, which is by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Here is the quote. To see reality is as simple as to see one's face in a mirror. Only the mirror must be clear and true. A quiet mind, undistorted by desires and fears, free from ideas and opinions, clear on all the levels, is needed to reflect the reality. And again, if you're following me as I'm sharing from The Seven Steps to Awakening, then you know that this is a part of my conscious practice. If a desire should show up, for example, yesterday with the Delta flight change, if there had been a desire for a specific solution, then what I do is notice there's a desire for a specific solution, and then I let that go, remembering that, I don't want anything specific. I don't want to be attached to the world in that way. If I have a specific desire like that, I'm attached to the world in a certain way. I do not want to be attached to the belief that I am this person and that I need things a certain way for my happiness. All of those desire attachments really create unhappiness. And they keep us locked in this delusion of illusion. So I notice desires when they rise, and then I change my mind. In fact, I don't recall right this second having a desire for a specific outcome on the phone. But what did happen was they rescheduled us for the next morning, and we're going to stay overnight in New York City near JFK and then fly out the next morning. And when they sent me the flight plan for our new flight, I noticed that we have a very, very short layover in Minneapolis. It might be 40 minutes. It's very short. And the thought crossed my mind, oh my God, if our flight isn't late at all, we're not going to make this connection. You know, I wish they hadn't done that. And then I noticed immediately that, you know, if that happened, if I held on to that thought, if that began to happen, I noticed some of the stress thoughts that would appear. I even noticed ideas of other people getting mad at me because I did this and now we've missed another flight and we're delayed a second time. And I realized that none of that upset could come if I simply didn't have a desire for how long the layover should be, for how smooth the transition from one plane to another should be. And so what I did was I moved into letting go of that desire. I moved into, trusting that whatever is perfect. But I'm even a little bit beyond that now. I don't do that as much as I used to. I just move back into realizing isness is always present and that that's where I'm going to stay, with isness, not with whatever seems to be happening in the world. So again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, to see reality is as simple as to see one's face in a mirror. Only the mirror must be clear and true. This is where our practice comes in. A quiet mind, undistorted by desires and fears, free from ideas and opinions, clear on all the levels, is needed to reflect the reality. All right, let's go to my journal, number 101. And I wrote, the perceiving, desiring, fearful mind is not what I am. When I identify with mind, I am fooled. To know myself, I must shed identification with interpretations, perceptions, opinions, desires, and fears. I must identify with the always present, still quiet heart. When attention is given to the always present, still quiet heart, I recognize what I am. That is I, and it is known. Do not speak, act, react, or decide without first taking time to shed identification with imposter ideas. Do not be fooled. Know and be thyself. So again, this is pointing to practice. If I had not practiced yesterday by looking at that desire for a longer layover, I probably, you know, would have called, first of all, in somewhat of a panic, because my mind would have gone into the idea of the other people being mad at me, because again, I made this decision for several people. So I probably would have been in somewhat of a panic, and I probably would have called Delta back and said, you know what, we just did this. But, you know, the lady did not tell me how short the layover was. I'm not at all happy with this. I want to change it to another flight. And who knows, you know, whether they would have said yes or no. You know, who knows what they would have said. But I would have acted based on that desire and on that fear of others. I would have acted. And when you act based on these things, what you really do is reinforce for yourself that you are this person and the world is true. And as the course lessons are saying right now, if you happen to be doing the current course lessons, that it's the ego's plan for salvation that will work. Right? The course is currently showing us in the current lessons that the ego's plan for salvation is that things be a certain way in the world. That when things are a certain way in the world, then I am saved. But as we know, what that plan for salvation does, actually, is just keep us attached to the idea that I am this person, I am this body, this world is real, and that just has nothing to do with awakening. That only has to do with continued deluded illusion. It seems to me, it's the way my intuition guides, that in my present place, the best way to ready myself for awakening so that grace can draw me further into that light is by being wise enough about what I am, that I do not fall for thoughts that are coming from the idea that I am something else. And in fact, remember I told you that when the thoughts came up yesterday about the short layover, remember I started to say, you know, I changed my mind about those thoughts. I changed my mind about that desire. And I started to say I decided to trust that, you know, whatever is given is fine. And then I said, well, not really. That's where I used to go. That's not really where my mind went now. Where my mind really went was just knowing that isness is present, no matter what appears to happen in the world. And isness is not touched. You know, you remember that, what's that guy's, the rapper's name? MJ Hammer, I think, was that his name, with the big pants? Remember his song, You Can't Touch This? You know, you can't touch this. You can't touch this, that which I am. And by just returning myself to that realization, then it doesn't matter what happens with the flight. And that's where I want to be. I don't want to be anymore, although it was helpful for a time. I don't want to be the person trusting that things will work out in a way I can accept. I don't want to be the person, still the person, that it's a higher level of trust, trusting that everything is given for my healing, right? I mean, the question then is, who's healing? Okay, this is telling me that I need to close PalTalk. Yep, and PalTalk just closed. So one moment if you're on the recording, and we will go back in there. Something went wrong with PalTalk, and this will just take a moment. Notice that isness is still present. Oh, well, we may not be going right back into PalTalk. It's not letting us back in. But that's the point. The point is that I want to stay with the presence that is not touched by anything, rather than saying, you know, even this is for my healing. Because when I say this is for my healing, I'm still identified with a idea of a person with an unhealed mind. And let's see, PalTalk is not letting us back in. We'll wait 1 second and we'll try again. As I try, what I'll do is I'll just read number 101 from the journal again. The perceiving, desiring, fearful mind is not what I am. When I identify with mind, I am fooled. To know myself, I must shed identification. Shed. I must shed identification with interpretations, perceptions, opinions, desires, and fears. I must identify with the always present, still quiet heart. When attention is given to the always present, right now present, still quiet heart, I recognize what I am. MJ Hammer, you can't touch this. And that is I, and it is known. And now the instruction or the practice. Do not speak, act, react, or decide without first taking time to shed identification with imposter ideas. Do not come from those ideas. Do not be fooled about who you are. Know and be thyself. All right. So what we are going to do next then is number 102. Number 102 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this is what it says. Realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. Again, realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. So I am going to number 102 in the journal. Hopefully if you're in the room, you know how to scroll down and click on number 102 if you haven't yet. Let's see. For some reason, I'm not able to go to 102 in my own journal. Apparently, I'm having... Oh, you know what it might be? I am upgrading to faster internet, and I bet the guy is outside doing it right this second. And I bet you I don't have internet, and that's what's going on. So tell you what, why don't we... let me just walk over here, and I'm going to grab my spiral notebook. Let's see if I can find, yep, I got the right notebook here. Let me just move to 102. Here we go. So this is what's in my notebook. Hopefully it's the same as on the screen. There might be a word or two difference. Sometimes I edit a little while typing it up. Again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. And in my journal I wrote, thoughts and interpretation are part of the character script. They are not from me, my true self. They can be watched on the outside like a movie, but they are not me and they do not affect me Remember who I am. Dive into and be that. Do not confuse the self with the character or its seeming inner script. And then again, I wrote, I don't know if this is online, because it looks like just a little note here, but I wrote, the seeming inner script is outside, like an oddly assorted procession going by, which is from ACIM Workbook Lesson 10. So again, what these particular quotes are hitting on for me is discernment, a practicing discernment, a living discernment between what I am and what I am not. And of course, from the perception of the world, the obvious what I am is this person, Regina Dawn Akers, with whatever thoughts appear in this head. But that's actually the illusion. That's not the truth. But because it appears so obvious, it appears to be so present, it is very easy to fall for whatever those thoughts are. It's very easy, you know, like I have two roommates, Danielle and Jasmine. It's very easy for a thought to cross my mind about something to say to my roommates, you know, and then to just say it without ever realizing, but that's not me. I'm not the one who wants to say this. I am not these thoughts. This is the character, and by just blindly listening to the character's thoughts and acting out the character's thoughts, I am not being who I am. And this practice is about getting very, very clear on the difference between who I am or what I am and what this character is. And literally stop acting on the character's script. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that I don't still see the character's script. Oh, yeah, now they're trying to get me to go onto the new internet. I see things coming up on my screen, but we'll deal with that later. This doesn't mean that I don't see the character script. The thought of what I might want to say to my roommates, for example, might appear. But it means that there's enough recognition in me that is not what I am, that I choose not to say that line. I choose not to play that game. So again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said at number 102, realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. And I wrote, thoughts and interpretation are part of the character script. They are not from me, my true self. They can be watched on the outside like a movie, but they are not me and they do not affect me. Remember who I am. Dive into and be that. Do not confuse the self with the character or its seeming inner script. And again, I don't know how that is typed online. It should at least be similar. So those of you who are listening online, you can go ahead and scroll down and to the left and click on number 103. And I'll continue to use my notebook here. Number 103, reality is not a concept, nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts. That's Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj from the book The Seven Steps to Awakening. Reality is not a concept, nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts. All right, here is what I have in my spiral notebook under 103. A concept or idea believed has apparent effects. Let's see. Therefore, experience confirms concepts, including the experience of heavenly realms and celestial bodies. However, reality has nothing to do with ideas, belief, or the apparent manifestation of belief, no matter how profound. Reality cannot be any idea or concept or any manifestation. All ideas, concepts, and manifestations come and go. Reality is the one true, ever-present, that does not come and go. Search for that which is always present without coming and going. Only that can be called ever-present reality. This was one of the main themes, as it turns out, of my teaching in Tacoma, Washington this weekend. We spent a good bit of time discerning the difference between reality and illusion. You know, there are a lot of ideas that people think are truth that are actually a part of the illusion. You know, for example, we may hear a story about someone's near-death experience. And, you know, there's all kinds of experiences that can happen during a near-death experience, and some of them have a lot to do with things that we believe are truth. But always in that near-death experience, there are other forms. There are things coming and going and changing. It's not anything that's always constant present. Anything that comes and goes and changes, anything that is not always present, is not reality. Which means that these near-death experiences that we hear about are still part of the illusion. Sometimes people think that reincarnation is truth. And that's a nice idea. The Course even refers to it as helpful, because it does show that there's more to us than this body, this temporary life. It at least gets the idea of ongoingness going. But yet, if there's a change in experiences, a change in who I am, you know, I'm a female in this lifetime, I was a male in that lifetime, that's still not truth, that's illusion. Some people believe that there are aliens that are more awakened than we are, and there are people who channel these aliens who are giving us advice and help on how to awaken on this planet. And some people feel that that is reality. But again, whenever there is change or when there are differences, if there is a difference between one planet's awakening and another planet's awakening, differences are a type of change, then that cannot be that one ongoing, ever-present reality that has no change, that has no differences. So that, too, must be a part of illusion. Mystical experiences, and we all know I've had my share. We know that I've had those wonderful, helpful teaching experiences of the time that I was an apple instead of a person. And that was a very helpful experience because I learned there is an I that is constant that has nothing to do with being a person, because it was able to be an apple. And it, of course, it did not have even a person's thinking or seeing or hearing or anything that a person has. It was completely different. That experience helped me to tune into the I that is, but the experience itself was illusion. Being an apple is no more real than being a person. All of our mystical experiences, the experiences of angels, some people have those. All of this is a part of the illusion. And it's important for us to realize that concepts and the manifestation of concepts are not real. It doesn't mean they aren't helpful. Some of them are very helpful, like my apple experience, which helped me to tune into the eye that is constant. But we don't want to confuse illusory experiences with truth. So Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "Reality is not a concept, nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts." And as I wrote towards the end of my journal, "Reality is the one true ever-present that does not come and go. Search for that which is always present without coming and going. Only that can be called ever-present reality." All right, in the room you can scroll down and to the left of the journal and click on number 104. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, quote 104, is at the bottom of page 31 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, and this is what it says. "As the mind is made of words and images, so is every reflection in the mind. It covers up reality with verbalization and then complains." I will read that again. "As the mind is made of words and images, so is every reflection in the mind. It covers up reality with verbalization and then complains." All right. Here's what I wrote in the journal at number 104. "Think of mind as the culmination of word thoughts, images," like the image I told you about when I was doing the course workbook lesson the other day where I was whisked through the clouds and then a quarter of me disappeared into the light, right? That's a part of mind. "Think of mind as the culmination of word thoughts, images, and manifestations experience." So this desk is a part of mind. My stomach just growled. I'm a little hungry. That is a part of mind. It's a manifestation experienced. That is all mind. There isn't one word thought, mental image, physical or non-physical manifestation that isn't mind. Define mind in this way. Then notice how all-consuming mind appears to be. Take note of the ideas and reflections that are mind, which previously may have been mistaken for self-thought, right, inside, or reality, outside. So again, we're being asked, first, take note of the ideas and reflections that are mind, which previously may have been mistaken for self-thought, inside, or reality, outside. And now ask, who is present, regardless of the thought, image, or manifestation presented? What are they presented to? Who am I? What is constant? And what changes? What must be ever-present reality? As I mentioned, the helpfulness in the experience when I was an apple. And if you don't know that story, you can go to YouTube and search for Regina Don Acres' I Was an Apple, and there's about a 3-minute or so explanation of that experience. But the value in that experience for me was that it was the first time I ever tuned into what I am, because that I was constant between the experience of being a human and being an apple. And there was nothing else that was constant. There was no thinking. There was no labeling. I always tell people, of course an apple can't talk, but if I could have talked, if you had come up to me while I was an apple and said, "What are you?" there's no way I would have come anywhere near being able to answer that question. There would have been no answer at all. I certainly could not have said, I am an apple. You know, those brain functions, that type of human thinking was not present. The experience of being an apple was completely different than the experience of being Regina. But I was there. I was constant. I was present. And this is that I that we all want to tune into. It's another thing that we talked about in Tacoma this weekend. I asked people to, you know, to the best of their ability, you know, if they get frustrated with someone or something, if they could remember right during the frustration or immediately after, because sometimes it doesn't happen during the frustration, notice if I was there. You know, when you're bliss, when you're very, very happy, because, you know, it's a gorgeous day and you're out, you know, walking along the Puget Sound. Stop for a moment and notice that I, that presence, that constance. And in fact, I even recommended that they ask frequently just the question, am I? Just stop at any point, hungry, full, wet, dry, warm, cold, sleepy, energetic, sick, healthy, you know, happy, sad, but continually ask the question, am I? And just like I tuned in on the I when I went from human apple, you can start to tune in on the I as you go through what appears to be a variety of experiences, what appears to be a variety of change, and yet you start noticing there's something that's always constant. There's something that's always there. It never changes. That's beginning to tune in. Again, we do want to learn the difference between what is real and what is not real. That which is real does not experience change, and there are no differences in it. That which experiences change and that that has differences in it are not real. And that's it. I think that's my time for today. So I will edit these two recordings together and then post them as one whenever I figure out how to get my new fast internet working. I have a modem up here I got to take out and, you know, different stuff. So they actually told me not to plug the modem in until 5 p.m. So we'll see if I even get up today. But if not today, tomorrow. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Dove. And I'm going to hang up now, okay? Bye.
Oh, yes. One quick question. What is the date in June that you're landing in JFK?
Oh, yeah, because I was hoping that maybe we could get together. June 20th. It's a Wednesday.
Oh, okay. I would like to do that.
Yeah, you'll have to skip your teaching.
That's fine.
Yeah, we would love to get together with you. We land at 3:50, so, you know, we do have a full long evening there, and it would be wonderful to see you.
Very good, love. Thank you so much.
Bye.